Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
What is going on, everybody? And happy NFL Draft Eve here on the OBR Streaming Network. This is Inside the Browns Beat. I'm Mike. He is Fred. And we are here to get ready for about 25 hours from now, where the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, will officially open the NFL draft. He will officially put the Las Vegas Raiders on the clock. And then we in Browns World will officially wait and see whether the Browns are going to have two picks tomorrow night, whether they're going to make any other kind of moves, and what they're going to do. It's been a long offseason leading up to this point, and we have finally made it. So we're so glad you're here joining us inside the Browns Beat here on the OBR Streaming Network. Just want to give a couple shout-outs here before we get into it. But first of all, shout-out to the OBR. The Orange and Brown Report is your home for the best Browns coverage in Cleveland. So get over to theobr.com and hit subscribe today, so that you can be a part of everything that happens on the site and here on the streaming network. Again, if you're joining us live on Twitch, on YouTube, on X, on Facebook, go ahead and jump in the comments. We want to hear what you have to say. We want to hear, now that we're just a day away, what your final thoughts going into the draft are, and we want you to be a part of the show. Also, I want to give a shout out real quick to two shows coming up. One, 9 o'clock tonight. Get the beers cold, because I'll be right back here for Garage Beers. We are going to have a great time. We're going to get back into the draft. We're all going to do our drafts. It's going to be really funny, I have a feeling. So make sure you're there for that. But we're also going to have a special guest on, our buddy Justin Rowan. He is the host of the official podcast of the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Chase Down Podcast. We're going to talk about the Cavs that are up 2-0 in their playoff series. So make sure you're there at 9 o'clock tonight for Garage Beers. And finally, tomorrow is the big day, because tomorrow is also when the OBR Draft Cave officially opens. And we are going to have wall-to-wall draft coverage. Really, it's going to be me and Pete and Joe there the entire time. And then Fred's going to jump in, and Park's going to jump in, and Sam's going to jump in, and Jack's going to jump in, and Barry's going to jump in, and the whole OBR staff is going to jump in. But we're getting kicked off tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. as the draft starts at 8. And then we'll be right back on Friday. That one starts at 6:45 p.m. The draft starts at 7. And on Saturday, the draft starts at noon, and we'll be there at 11:45 at the OBR Draft Cave. It's happening this weekend, so make sure you are a part of it. All right, Fred, I've talked enough. People aren't even here to hear. They're not here to hear me talk. They're here to hear you talk, because you are the Browns Beat, and this is Inside the Browns Beat. So, Fred, what's going on, my friend? How's life?
Well, we had our first real football look yesterday. Todd Monken at his first practice. The NFL gives first-year head coaches an extra mini camp, and so he took advantage of it, and we were able to watch them practice on Tuesday. They did so again today, and they are tomorrow. The only day that was open for the media was yesterday, so we got to see real live football being thrown around, and there were some things going on with that I took away. And now it's all focus, you know, with the draft, you know, less than, like you said, 24 hours. Kind of tired of talking about it since the end of the season. Now, what are they actually going to do? They're going to show their hand, you know, on what they, who they really like and what they're going to do. And so, yeah, it was, you know, I can talk a little bit about the mini camp. Todd Monken, you can tell it was only one day, but I can already get the feel of a little bit of old school. I mean, we were told it was going to be at 12:45, and media was going to meet with him afterwards starting at 2:20. Well, so we thought, well, certainly they're not going to go 2 hours. Kevin Stefanski never went more than an hour, maybe in an hour and a half. They went over 2 hours, because they started early and they went to like 2:25. And this is like in shorts. And now I know they were excited to be out there for the first day, but my goodness. And they threw 11 and 11 more than I'd seen in ages. I think part of it, he said, was because they were allowed to. They're usually not allowed to do 11 on 11 at this time of the year. They're usually in phase two, which is just classroom. But in this mini camp, they were able to do everything. So I think he's trying to take advantage of it. Even though it's first time they were on the field, the players were just learning the plays as they were running through them. And so that was interesting. He said a couple things after, that I took away as a little bit as a draft hint. Maybe he didn't mean to, or maybe it didn't mean anything. But he was asked about, because they put the first five out there on the offensive line. There was DeJuan Jones, Luke Whippler, and Elgton Jenkins weren't practicing, but they were there.
Right.
Well, who was out there? Well, besides that, twice when we were asking if he feels good about what they have, he said, well, we still have some to add after the draft. So he said that twice in questions about the offensive line. So that leads me to believe either wishful thinking that he's hoping they draft linemen, or they've already talked about it and are going to make a point to get one, whether first round or two in the first round or top two or three rounds. So that was a little bit of a tidbit. The quarterbacks are wearing GoPro, little cameras. So I guess it's another tool. The coaches now can see where they're looking. So that was kind of interesting to see, you know, Sanders, Watson, and Gabriel with those on their helmets. You guys rehabbing. Quinshon Judkins didn't practice, but he looked pretty good. I mean, you know, there was some reports that he might, you know, never make it back. You know, I think he's going to be ready. You know, they're going to be careful with him, but I think he's for sure ready for training camp. He might even be around, you know, at the end of the spring. So those are a few of the highlights of the mini camp. Like I said, they passed a lot. They ran 11 on 11. A lot of guys flying around. There was some veterans not there. Denzel Ward's usually at these things. He wasn't there, but Monken really played that down. You know, the Garrett, Jerry Jeudy, Ward, Del Pitt, some of the more established starters. So all in all, it's the first day. I wouldn't read too much into it. I thought Deshaun Watson moved around pretty good and threw the ball pretty good. And Sanders did too. Sanders looked a little even sharper than what I saw last year. You remember last year, you know, after he took over, we're really only allowed to see the first 15 minutes when they're stretching. And so it's really first time to see him in 11 on 11 in practice. First time to see Watson really in a practice since training camp, 2024. So a few little things like that going on. Glad to talk about or answer questions if anybody has any, but talk mostly about the draft. Just thought I'd get that out of the way, some of the beginning of actual football.
No, and listen, we're going to come back to that a little bit later towards the end of the show. Again, we're here from 7 to 8 tonight, so make sure you're buckled up. But, yeah, like you said, Fred, we're going to start with the NFL draft. And so, Fred, you know, this is a little bit of a rhetorical question, if you will, because Andrew Berry, if there's one thing that he has always done really well, or frustratingly well to a lot of Browns fans, is man, oh man, does he play his cards close to the vest when it comes to the draft, right? We all go into last year wondering what they're going to do, thinking they're going to take Travis Howard. And it turns out they had a trade worked out for weeks with Jacksonville to move back to five. And there was no indication, like obviously people were talking, well, maybe they'll move back, but no news broke. No, it wasn't like, oh, the Browns are going to do this. Going into this, we're not really seeing a lot of the Browns are going to do this. We've seen a couple players say, a couple people say, oh, watch out for this player at six. But there's been a few of those. So my question for you, Fred, is any intel that you have or anything that you heard around Berea that gives you any inclination to maybe not who the Browns are going to take, but how they're going to approach this draft?
No, not really. As you said, I mean, and to Andrew Berry's credit, he should be close to the vest. The only thing, last year he kind of went on and on about Hunter, you know, being the same as Ohtani, like a unicorn. And you're like, okay, you have the second pick. And Cam Ward's going to the Titans. So why would you go on and on about him if you weren't taking him? And the only variable in that trade that was worked out was the only reason it wasn't official till they went on was Tennessee absolutely had to turn in the card for Cam Ward, which leads you to believe the Browns would have taken Cam Ward. So with that being said, yeah, I mean, I think he truly is sure they have some ideas, but they really don't know what the variables are. Even at six, what the first five, you could pretty much write in ink Mendoza, but 2, 3, 4, and 5, I don't know if anybody really knows, because there's teams that could trade up ahead to get somebody, and you don't even know.
I was just going to say, it feels very much everything I keep seeing. It just feels like that pick number 3 with Arizona is just such a wild card. Like that feels so volatile. That whole pick, that whether it's Arizona that makes it or whether somebody comes in, that third selection feels very volatile. Feels like it could really swing the draft in a weird direction. So you're exactly right, Fred. We have no idea what's going to happen between 1 and 6 or 2 and 6.
And think of this. They've shortened the first round. They used to get like 10 minutes between picks. I believe it's been shortened to 8, which is better for fans. So you're not, you know, going to be, you know, that's going to add up over time. That is, I think every time there's a trade, it starts over the clock. But these guys are going to have things kind of worked out, contingency plans, or that 8 minutes is going to go and they're just going to have to make their pick. And so I would not be surprised if the Browns just stay at 6 and make the pick. I think they would like to trade down, but I think they have to really feel good that they are able to move down, but not far enough to still get a top end talent. I mean, I think they need offensive weapons. I mean, it screams that when you fire Kevin Stefanski, basically because your offense scores 15 a game and 16 a game in the last 2 years. So why wouldn't you get weapons, especially like at wide receiver and offensive tackle? I mean, the weapon is more in the wide receiver. So it's hard for me to believe that they would trade down if they didn't know they were going to get a really good player. Because if you trade down even to 12, which a lot of thing has, you know, been talked about with Dallas, you might not get the best wide receiver, or you might not get the best tackle. You might get the second or third best of either. Now, if you have them all ranked the same, then it doesn't matter. But I don't want to go too far down that you lose a blue chip type player. And that's just me. And because again, we talked about that on this show and with the scouts. In fact, the scouts we had the last 2 weeks went back and forth, you know, like, you know, one said, well, you got to take Carnell Tate at 6, but then came back and said, all things being equal, I think I'd take the tackle at 6.
Right.
Because he felt like he, and I'm like, well, that's kind of how we're at. What do you, you know, I saw 3 graded first round wide receivers and like 3 second round, first or second round. And then another one that had at tackle 2 first round with like 5 first or second. So it seems like there's a little more selection at tackle. So that's why I lean to the wide receiver first and the tackle second. But as I wrote, that means they'll draft 2 defensive players, you know, but like last year.
Well, and we're going to go to that, because I do think it's been my thing that I have said this entire draft process is that I think everybody's looking at this in terms of the Browns roster. Not that it's a problem or whatever. And I'm doing the same thing. We saw it last year. We saw it last year when we were screaming for offensive weapons and wide receivers and stuff. And Andrew Berry went out there and took a defensive tackle with the first pick, and he took a linebacker with the second pick. And I think it shows you, I think more people, and we're going to get to that in a little bit because I want to talk about it with you more, but I think more people need to pull back the reins and understand that if there's a guy rated very highly on Andrew Berry's board, he's not going to go get a guy rated lower because it fits a position. He's going to take the highest rated guy on his board. I think he has shown you that multiple times throughout his career. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But Fred, for your perspective, so you brought up you would go wide receiver at six. And I'm so torn on what I think is going to happen. Because on one hand, I look at what they've done this offseason, right? And they really address the offensive line. Like, here's the thing. I know they don't have that blue chip left tackle right now, but their offensive line is improved, right? They have improved the offensive line. If for no other reason, then these guys are probably going to be out there playing next year, as opposed to the offensive line they had last year, which none of them actually played. So they've spent a lot of time addressing the offensive line in free agency and trades and stuff like that. And so to me, that says, okay, they've really taken care of a chunk of that. Does that free them up to go get that wide receiver? Because I would love for them to do that. But on the other hand, Fred, you've got to look at history. And history tells you that Andrew Berry hasn't looked at wide receiver early in a draft. Now, obviously, he hasn't had a lot of early draft picks to look at wide receiver. But it feels to me like wide receiver just continues to be a position that Andrew Berry feels like he can get later, which I don't know why he feels that way, because it hasn't worked. But I don't know. I just keep getting torn on. I ultimately come down to, I think if it's down to Andrew Berry picking between those two positions, he probably is going to lean towards the offensive lineman. It just feels that way to me, because I feel like he thinks they can get weapons at other point in the draft and he wants to get that offensive lineman. Do you get any kind of sense like that?
Well, yeah, that's exactly, you know, in doing a projection for tomorrow, you know, is that I asked Andrew Berry at the pre-draft press conference about almost like, is your philosophy not to take a wide receiver in the first or second round? Because in your first, you know, was it six drafts? You haven't drafted a wide receiver higher than Cedric Tillman, and that was 74th overall. And he said, no, it's nothing against philosophy. And he went back to the history. We had Jarvis Landry. We had Odell Beckham. We traded for Amari Cooper and Jerry Jeudy. I get all that, but you didn't do that this year. And you banked on right. A third round pick, Tillman, last year to be your starter. He still got potential, but he didn't do it. And you got Isaiah Bond, who you got as an undrafted free agent. It just begs to address it at the top. I mean, we can argue all day how much better Joe Flacco looked with the Bengals when he had two top tier wide receivers. And maybe you can't draft Ja'Marr Chase this year, but I think you can get close to T. Higgins with Carnell Tate or Mekhi Lemon or whoever. And so that's where I just feel like, yeah, that's what holds me back. He has not been good or even tried at the wide receiver in the draft, and he really hasn't tried at the offensive line other than the Jed Wills in his first draft. And so I don't think you have to overthink this. Just take the best guy you have at wide receiver, because a Carnell Tate, for example, in my opinion, is immediately one of the best two wide receivers you have. If not number one, he's at least number two. And so, hey, you need those guys. Get them.
He is way up here on that list of wide receivers you have. But it's funny, and this is something I think we're going to address even later tonight, because I think there's a very fun list that comes out of. We talked about it with David from Our Lads. He called it, what did he call it, like prospect fatigue or something like that, where you I think about it with Spencer Fano a lot. We went through the entire football season talking about how Spencer Fano was the best offensive tackle in football. We just went on and on and on and on and on about Spencer Fano head and shoulders above everybody else. And then you get into the draft process, and then everybody wants to start like nitpicking and finding other things. And you get to that draft fatigue. And I think it happens with Carnell Tate a little bit, where it's like, I don't want to talk about Caleb Downs from a Browns perspective, but you're starting to see it with Caleb Downs. You're starting to see real actual people that get paid to write about football being like, well, is this kid from Oregon a better safety than Caleb Downs? What? Like, you don't have to always sound like the smartest guy in the room. Just please look at what happens. But, Fred, what I want to do for a minute, because I do, we will address other areas of need as we get into this show a little bit. But we're sitting here talking about offensive linemen, and we're sitting here talking about wide receivers. So what I want to do is just kind of go through the top guys in those position groups and just kind of get your feel or your opinion. And I'll give a little scouting report on the guys because I keep seeing this. Like, I saw MC Lawrence say they can still get an elite wide receiver at 24. I don't know about that. I think there's three elite wide receivers, and then every other wide receiver could be really good, but they have some big holes that they got to get figured out. I think there's three guys in this draft that are really good. So let's run through the top guys at each of those two positions, and maybe you tell us your preference in the comments, and Fred, you kind of share your preference as well. But let's start with wide receiver, because I think you and I are both on that page of if we had to pick somebody at six, I would love to see a top end wide receiver, and we obviously know all about Carnell Tate here in Ohio, but I think the biggest thing that goes against Carnell Tate when people talk about him, Fred, is that they see that he was on a team with Jeremiah Smith and they go, well, he wasn't even the number one wide receiver on his own team. And I think that is a hideous way to look at it, because nobody would be the number one wide receiver on a team with Jeremiah Smith. He is a different kind of beast altogether. You talked about a Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson. That's what we're talking about there with Jeremiah Smith. But for Carnell Tate to be able to get the number of targets that he gets, and to be as explosive as he was and reliable as he was with Jeremiah Smith on the field, I think says something. He was able to steal targets from Jeremiah Smith, and I think that makes a difference. But Carnell Tate, Fred, we heard David talk about it on our lads. He said clearly his number one wide receiver in the draft. I just think he is such a combination of so many things that he makes the game look easy. It's like a good way to put it. He's fast, but he's graceful. Like, he doesn't ever look like he looks like he's just striding along. He is big and tall and lean, but he's wildly strong. He is physical, yet he's agile. He is all of these things just blended into a package. So when you watch him, it doesn't really look like he has to try all that hard to be as good as he is. Carnell Tate, for me, he's my number one wide receiver. And it's not an Ohio State thing, because I don't really have an Ohio State thing. But I think he is everything you're looking for in a receiver.
Well, I was on a radio show before I came on here, and that was the knock too. Well, he wasn't the number one at Ohio State with Jeremiah Smith. And I said, well, you could put Mekhi Lemon or Jordan Tyson on that team.
Jerry Judy.
And they wouldn't be number one on that team. You know, so that, like my thing with the Bengals with Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. I mean, that doesn't mean T. Higgins stinks. You know, he's a really good wide receiver. But, I like Tate because a lot of the intangibles. I mean, he is Ohio State. All you have to do is turn on the tape for NFL players that have played at Ohio State. And I'm not just saying, it's like a factory. They listed them all that are in the NFL, and they said, well, Tate's somewhere in between Emeka Abuka and Chris Olave. I'm like, okay, sign me up. I mean,
right.
Maybe he's not the best one, but I watch guys that were even in the past, Terry McLaurin, and I thought, he's pretty good. Then he gets the NFL, and he's a star. You know, it's at that era, they weren't using the receivers like they are now, but I just think, why try to talk yourself out of a player that's as productive as he is? He's got the same time. Yeah, it's not blazing speed, but same time as Jackson Smith and Ajigba. I think he was the most valuable offensive player in the NFL this year. And Abuka, we talked about. So, yeah, I just think you overthink it. If he's the best guy you have, that's a big need for you. Take him. You know, at number six, I don't know how many guys you would have ranked ahead of him. But if you, like I said, if you have somebody that's still there that's so far ahead of him and he's on defense or wherever he is, you take him. But all things close, that's a major need. Where are you going to get these guys? You end up trying to draft one in the third, fourth, fifth round and hope you catch lightning in a bottle. listen, Jamari Thrash isn't going to do it. And you can't just keep drafting David Bell and Anthony Schwartz and Cedric Tillman and Jamari Thrash in the third, fourth, fifth, and round and think you're going to have top-tier receivers. I mean, if Nacua was what he is, he would have been the first-round pick. I mean, that's they were very fortunate with the Rams, or they developed him to find him. And so I'm just saying it's more times than not you draft a wide receiver at the top of the draft. Think of this, Mike. You were probably following the team. I was following the draft. The Browns had the sixth pick, and they traded down. They traded and got a boatload of guys. They got Phil Taylor, was probably the best one they got for him. And you know who the Falcons took? A guy named Julio Jones, who, if he's not in the Hall of Fame, he's going to be doggone close.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Carnell Tate or Lemon are Julio Jones, but they're a lot closer than just a bunch of draft picks that you hope you hit on.
Yeah. Just elsewhere in the wide receiver, just kind of the top group, Mekhi Lemon, you've brought him up a couple times. He's a beast. Mekhi Lemon's a beast. He's strong. He's the funny thing is he's the smallest of the group. He's 5'11". He's not a big guy. And I know that scares some people. And he also isn't blazing fast, but he's fast enough. But he plays way bigger than he is. And there is a tenacity, like I kind of talked about how graceful and like just easygoing Carnell Tate makes the game look. Mekhi Lemon is mean out there. Mekhi Lemon makes the game look. He makes everybody look like they're afraid of him. He's tenacious, but he is. Pete continues to compare him to Amon-Ra St. Brown, which I think playing style wise is a great comparison because Amon-Ra St. Brown isn't a burner. He's not just going to always beat guys deep. He is a crafty wide receiver that just knows how to play. That's what Mekhi Lemon is. But if you want to know why people really love Mekhi Lemon, outside of the fact that he is crafty and that he is physical and strong and all that, he's nearly 200 career targets in college, 3 drops. Mekhi Lemon does not drop the ball. And on contested catches, like last year, contested catches. Again, he's not the biggest guy, but I think he brought in 7 of 10 contested catches. Like Mekhi Lemon wins the football. And so a different playing style than Carnell Tate, but Mekhi Lemon is a baller. I'm going to go through them just real quick. And then you let me know thoughts, Fred. Jordan Tyson's probably without the injury history, Jordan Tyson probably be the number one ranked wide receiver in this draft. He's an athletic freak of nature. He's like his brother. It's like watching a basketball player play wide receiver. He jumps higher than everybody. When Jordan Tyson snatches the football out of the air, it's one of those ones where you can hear it. Like you could be in the stands and you'll hear him catch a pass, and not in a bad way. Like he's got tough hands. It's that he goes and like grabs the ball and brings it in. Another guy that doesn't drop passes. Again, super fast, dynamic with the football after the catch. There's everything to like about Jordan Tyson. Except for one thing, and that is in each of the last 3 years, he missed time because of injury. But I have seen reports that teams feel pretty comfortable about his injury history, especially because he had the knee injury early, and that's the one that I think scares people. But a broken collarbone is a broken collarbone. Like, that's not like a recurring injury that you have to worry about. And his other leg injury is not something I think that you have to worry about, recurring injury. So I've seen a lot of things saying teams are pretty comfortable with his health. Other guys you expect to see to go early. So for me, Fred, it's those three guys and then a fall off, because the next group of guys we're talking about, Casey Concepcion from Texas A&M, super dynamic, fast, get the ball in his hands. He makes things happen, but he's also really good at getting the ball down the field. He's kind of a center fielder when he's running routes. He's great at finding the football, great at losing defenders. He's got some drops issues. He's not the best catcher of the football. And he's a smaller guy as well. So you worry about, man, taking a big hit somewhere. But Casey Concepcion going to be there at some point in the first round. Omar Cooper, another guy. When you get the ball in his hands, look out, because he's a home run hitter out of Indiana. Omar Cooper Jr. is, again, speed demon, everything. He's just not He's not the guy that you're just going to throw a ball up to and watch him go get it. Like, you got to get him open. And once you do, he will make something happen. And then you'll see Denzel Boston's name, 6'4", big body wide receiver, excellent in contested catches, but just not going to burn anybody deep, not going to lose a lot of defenders on his routes. So for me, Fred, I think you've got those three guys, Tate and Lemon and Tyson. And then I think there's a bit of a shelf before you get to that next group of guys like Concepcion and Boston and Cooper and that group. What are your thoughts there?
Well, that's kind of how I look at it too. I mean, as far as that's why I just feel like you have a better chance to get a tackle, you know, with the second pick as opposed to taking the tackle first. And what's going to be available in the wide receiver is more the latter. I think the other three would be gone. I like Tyson. Again, guys, it's hard to know when they're going to get injured or if they're going to be injury prone or whatever. There's guys that have had injury history and then never really had that problem beyond. That's where I just feel the scouts and their homework and their checking, whoever they feel best about at six, you take. And there could already be a wide receiver taken before the Browns. You know, Tate could be gone. And I just think you just got to get a playmaker because I don't know if they're going to be there when you pick the second time. And I think you can get offensive linemen. And the one thing, the Browns signed or traded for three guys that with contracts that you know are going to be starting. And that's Titus Howard somewhere. Probably yep. Right tackle, Zion Johnson at left guard, and Elton Jenkins either at guard if Batonio does not return or at center. Todd Monken said yesterday he probably would have been at center if he would have been practicing because Whipler's not back. So three you could pencil in. But even if you had to start the season, you do have DeJuan Jones who started last year the first three games at left tackle. And you do have Tevin Jenkins, who you re-signed. He finished the season at right guard. So, and you have Luke Whipler. So you're not in dire straits and have to force. That's why I think you take the wide receiver and then you get, even if you have to develop, even whoever you get at tackle, if maybe they're not polished right now, I think Max, whatever his name is, Hema or whatever. From Arizona State, mm-hmm. Or one of those guys that haven't played that long, whoever's available at 24, develop them, or give them a little time. They don't have to start the first game because you do have some options right now. So at the wide receivers, yes, I want to get one of those top three. And then I wouldn't even be opposed to getting another wide receiver, in the first two rounds, probably at 39. If one of those guys you mentioned, Boston, Concepcion, drop down, or even like a guy who'd be a first-round pick, Chris Bell from Louisville, if he wouldn't have tore his ACL. Ted Hurst is a guy maybe down the road a little bit. I mean, legitimate, if you've already got one of those top three, then you can maybe work with a guy that fell down because he had an injury or something, but you're not relying on him like the Browns have done. Oh, their top pick was a third round wide receiver and they're expecting him to really set the world on fire.
Yeah.
You got to get somebody that you know you can depend on, step right in and play.
That's right. So go to the other side because you hit on it. And there's a group of tackles that, I think a lot of are going to garner a lot of interest. I basically everybody on the list of tackles is somebody that there are Browns fans that want one of these guys. These guys are on everybody's list. And so let's talk about these guys because there's kind of like there's like three little groups of them. The first group are the Utah tackles. There are two Utah Utes in this draft that are offensive tackles that I think the Browns are probably interested in. One, Spencer Fano, I already talked about. Now, Spencer Fano, first year playing in college, played left tackle. He was great. Then they brought in Caleb Lomu, and Spencer Fano moved over to right tackle. And a lot of people are asking the question, well, what does that say about Spencer Fano? And I want to tell you what it says about him because I want to make sure we're clear on this. It says that he was the more versatile of the two players and they had faith and trust in him to get over there and play right tackle. It also tells you that while he is an exceptional pass blocker, and he is, he gives up no sacks, no sacks. He's also a better run blocker than he is a pass blocker. And it doesn't mean he's not a great pass blocker. Again, he gives up no sacks, but he's better as a run blocker. Spencer Fano is unbelievable. And I 100%, without a hesitation, people really get caught up on this. Can a guy go from right tackle to left tackle, right tackle? Yes. Yes. You're all screaming about Tristan Wirfs and how we didn't take him and we took Jed Wills. Tristan Wirfs was a right tackle in college. It happens when the guys are good enough. And I think Spencer Fano, absolutely good enough. He is phenomenal. I talked about Caleb Lomu. Awesome. An awesome left tackle. He is an elite level pass blocker. Elite. Another guy gives up virtually no sacks. But Caleb Lomu is a step below as far as run blocking, not quite as tenacious in run blocking and not anywhere near as athletic in Spencer Fano to kind of pull, get out, go, get out in front of his running backs or screen passes or whatever. Fano, much more versatile. Lomu, much more of like a kind of in the box, set his feet and just, he's not going to let you buy him to get to the quarterback, which again, would be valuable. The next group are like the young unproven guys. And you brought one of them up, Max Ehenechor. Max Ehenechor is shocking to watch, to be honest. Think about what Max Ehenechor is. He is this young kid that started playing football 3 years ago. He grew up in Nigeria playing basketball and soccer, moved to the U.S. and played basketball and soccer when he was 13 years old, picked up football 3 years ago, and has blossomed into what you see. He is still raw, but Max Ehenechor, I think his ceiling is through the roof. He is through the roof. And a lot of people feel the same way about Mason Freeling, a guy that's played football his whole life, but very limited snaps at Georgia. But there are people that fell in love with Mason Freeling. Again, a lot of people think when all said and done, he has a chance to be the best tackle taken in this draft, does Mason Freeling. And then you go to a couple guys that have been linked to the Browns. I know a lot of people, well, Mauingo has not really been linked too much to the Browns. Mauingo is a mauler, not the most athletic guy in the world. Little concern about some disc issues in his back. But when he's out there, he's mean, man. I remember just watching him all through the playoffs with Miami. He constantly had guys on the ground. It reminded me of watching Wyatt Teller just throw in his prime, throwing guys around, pancakes everywhere. That was what Mauingo was. And then Caden Proctor. And I got to tell you, Fred, the Browns have been linked several times to Caden Proctor. And initially, I didn't love it. But I think it's for two reasons. And I'm going to admit this. I think I have Alabama tackle PTSD. Because we did that once. I have a little Alabama tackle PTSD. And then I also have big, gigantic tackle PTSD because of how we've seen DeJuan Jones not be able to stay out on the field. Yeah. And then I looked and looked and looked and researched and found out more on Caden Proctor, and the guy's a freak. Yeah, he's 350 pounds, but he's 20% body fat. That is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. He is an athletic freak of nature. Somebody brought up Carnell Tate's 40-inch vertical. I think Caden Proctor has like a 34-inch vertical for his size. He is a big dude, but he is a big, in-shape guy, and he is super athletic. His feet are super fast, and I know the Browns are at least interested. That's what the reports are. So you got kind of six guys there, and don't let me leave out Blake Miller, the Strongsville guy that went and played at Clemson and projected to go from anywhere to the mid late first round into the second round. But that's where he's kind of projected. So you got those guys that are going to be sitting there. Who are the guys that really tickle your fancy, Fred? And you let us know in the comments too.
Well, yeah, you know, it's like Fano makes the most sense to me. If you take one with the first pick, I already said, I feel like the wide receiver is the way to go. And then I'm happy with any of them. It's, again, they haven't been great at picking offensive linemen. I mean, Zach Zinner, you know, I don't know why he isn't. He should be a star or a starter without even had to go get a free agent. When you drafted him, he was the captain of the Michigan National Championship team, and he was the captain of the offensive line. I don't know what happened with him other than he broke his leg and maybe he's not the same. But with that being said, these are guys you drafted. You know, we still have to see if Luke Whipler. But as far as the tackle, yeah, I would take the highest rated one you have. Proctor, a lot of things you said I like. I like a lot of things that I've read about Max. Freeling, you know, the biggest knock on him is he hasn't played a whole lot and it might take a little time to develop. I'd say if he's still there at 24, that's who I'd take. If he's gone, then I'd take the next one, whether it be if Proctor was there or Max or one of those guys. But I think somebody will be there. Well, Mo, I like him. So I'm not in love with any of them. I just want one that can come in and be the left tackle for 10 years. You know, that's what you wanted with Jed Wills. I mean, you know, he should be like in his sixth or seventh year with the Browns and not even, this shouldn't even be a problem, but it is. So whoever they, and George Warhop or whoever, when they look and say, okay, get me this guy. And if it's Max, I'm all for it. You know, if it's Proctor, hey, I don't see anything wrong with that. And the thing that I'm not afraid of is letting them sit a little bit, because a lot of these have a little bit of development, maybe, other than Fano and Maui Goa. And that's okay. You do have DeJuan Jones and KT Leviston that could at least, they played last year. They played there. Or you could even move Titus Howard over to left tackle if you really felt like you weren't happy with either of the other guys. Mm-hmm. If you didn't get this guy, if he's not ready day one.
Well, again, and just the availability of the guys that they've signed. I know there's some people that are just really fired up about the guys they've signed. And I've been trying to, the point I've always tried to make on the offensive line, because we see it every year on a lot of teams, is a really great offensive line do not need to be made up of top end offensive linemen. Really great offensive line. Teams with really great offensive lines aren't paying the top left tackle, the top left guard, the top center, the top right guard, the top right tackle. That's not how it works. It has to be a cohesive unit of guys that go out there, play well together, understand their concepts from their coach. They have to have talent, but these guys do not have to be the top guys out there to be a really good offensive, cohesive offensive line. And, you know, I don't know. I think I would have a real issue going into the season saying KT Leviston's the starting left tackle. That would hurt me a little bit. I would be sitting there in training camp hoping somebody cuts somebody or they find a trade somewhere. But yeah, if it's going to be DeJuan, it's got to, you know, again, I want him to find a tackle. Don't get me wrong. I would love a lot of, there's not a lot of these guys that they could take that I'd be upset about. To be honest with you, I don't know if there's any guys that they could take out of that list that I'd be upset about. And there's other guys. There's other guys down the line. Jennings Dunker. Yeah. And again, I know people, oh, he might be a guard. Maybe. These guys have played tackle. Tiernan from Northwestern. I think there are a lot of opportunities, just to kind of go back to that point, Fred. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities to find really good offensive linemen in this draft. But if you're going to go for a tackle, I think you got to wind up with one of these guys. You got to. And I do think there is this pressing thing of there's some teams between 6 and 24 that are going to be looking for tackles. I think you're going to see a run of tackles in the first round.
Yeah, I had been reading some things, you know, that I don't know what it was. Somebody from ESPN or something said there could be 4, 5, 6 or something, like you said, a run on the tackles. And so, yeah, I mean that, but I don't know. I guess if they're taking tackles, then they might push the wide receivers down. I guess that's where you just have to know what you're doing. But, you know, the Browns have added, you know, like you said, that's been their focus.
Yes.
Is offensive line. It's not complete, but they haven't done anything at wide receiver. And where else, if you're talking about it, the given is quarterback. But other than quarterback, you know, running back room, you know, you got to feel pretty good about Judkins is healthy and Samson and tight end Fannin. You put all the effort in the offensive line, get the wide receivers. I keep beating the dead horse. I mean, why did he look so much better after his time with the Browns? Because he's just said, I don't know the plays. I heard him after the first game. He threw for 300 yards. Well, I knew number one and number five were pretty good, and I just looked for him and threw him the ball, you know?
Right.
Got top of the end playmakers, and that's going to make everybody look better. Your quarterbacks, your line, you know, your running game, everything. So
I saw this all the way back. Let's see here. Well, somebody asked it before, and I didn't put a star by because apparently this is my first time doing this. But somebody asked about some proposed trades. So have you seen any proposed trades, rumor trades? And again, these are all it's all proposed by people online. And there's rumors. Maybe some things get floated from teams. But again, it's all going to depend on who's available at 6-2. But again, I think we have to talk about trade down possibilities. Have you seen any that intrigue you?
You know, I don't really like trading in the AFC. You know, I've seen some that Chiefs might want to come from 9-6. I mean, I'd rather just see the Browns go up 3 spots than 6 or more like the Dallas. Everybody keeps proposing the Dallas because Jerry Jones and, you know, falling in love with probably one of the Ohio State guys or even David Bailey or something like that. But that puts you out of the range of getting one of the top tier guys, you know, the way it looks like it'll end up. Well, this one here, 6-39 for 12-20. I don't think that's enough. I would almost take a second round, you know, next year thrown in with the 12-20, make it would be more appealing to me. So you have some future. I don't know if you can get a number one for moving down like you did last year, but if somebody's really desperate and they know, you know, there's a guy they want, Jeremiah Love or whatever, if he was still available, maybe you could on the clock give them to give that up. I don't know.
I'm going to tell you this.
Saw what the Bengals gave up 10 overall to get a, you know, Dexter Lawrence, you know, and I think that, you know, that's a proven player, but it's not a cheap player. So yeah, you gotta, unless you really love the deal, then you stay and make the pick.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, I've waffled back and forth on this. I think I would take this. And here's why. Cause even if you don't get Tate and Lemon, I don't think 3 wide receivers are going to be gone by 12. So you probably have a shot at Tyson if or Lemon, what, or I don't know what, somebody skips on Tate, whatever. But I think you got a shot at one of those 3. And then you're going to, so instead of having 6, 24, and 39, you're going to have 12, 20, and 24. I think you can get one of those top 3 wide receivers. I think you get one, you pick one of these guys that you think of, maybe Max Ehenichor, maybe Monroe Freeling, Caden Proctor. One of those guys will be around at 20. And then I think you could jump right back in and get a guy like Concepcion Cooper. I think you could get 2 of the top level, at least the top 2 tier wide receivers and 1 really good tackle. And I think you could call it a day in the first round. I think that would be awesome.
Well, yeah, I misread that a little bit. Thinking that was in place. I forgot you have the 24 pick.
Yeah.
So you still would have 12, 20, and 24. So you'd get 3 of the top 24 guys, and you could get 2 wide receivers and a tackle, or 2 tackles and a wider, or even another position if you wanted to take a top tier safety or cornerback or edge rusher or something like that. So, yeah, you know, if you can squeeze them and get that 20, I had read with the, where they didn't want to give up the 20 pick in a trade. And so, yeah, you throw a 3rd first round pick, you get those guys for 5 years at a reasonable rate. Yeah. I can be talked into that one.
I know. I saw a lot of people posted online from Dallas proposed trades to come up with Cleveland. Like, we'll give them 12 and 107 for 6 and 39, and we'll give him next year's sixth round pick. Like, no, what? No, that is not how that's going to work. You're going to have to overpay to come up. Really quick, Fred, other areas in the draft that you would like to see the Browns address? And you guys throw it in the comments too, but we've talked a lot about wide receivers and offensive linemen, but what are the other areas on the team that you want slash expect the Browns to address in the draft?
Well, you know, they showed their hand when they lost Cameron Thomas, who was like their third or fourth defensive end. They signed Epinesa, and then he failed the physical. So he was projected to be a pretty good, you know, addition. So I have to think they feel like they need to get another edge rusher. And I know they like Mason Thomas out of Oklahoma. They brought him in. I don't know how high they would have to pick him, but there are some edge rushers in this draft. But I think you got to look at the secondary. You didn't bring Martin Emerson back, at least to yet. So you have two frontline corners. And we know the problem was every time Ward was out or Campbell was out, you had no depth. You really need a third. And so that could be where you could address and get D'Angelo Pons or somebody that's more of a true slot. safety's another one. I mentioned that Delpit and Hickman are kind of in their final year. I don't think it's so much they don't like Hickman. They didn't really tender him like a high draft pick. So another team could have signed him, but he is in the last year of his contract, and so is Delpit. And the Jim Schwartz liked to play three safeties, and so does Ruden Berg. So you need another safety even so you have three. You really don't have much beside Hickman and Delpit, and especially if they're in contract years. So I could see them adding a safety. I don't know if it would be one of their high picks, but if you got a trade and you did end up with three first rounds, you might be able to take a safety, you know, with one of those 20 picks, you know, the guy from Toledo, or you couldn't get Downs unless you took him with the first pick.
But correct,
there are some guys, you know, there. It just depends on how aggressive they feel they want to be at safety. Again, you could take one maybe in the third round or fourth round, but I think those areas they address when you look at the defense. Most of the defense, you don't really need stars or front line, but you need guys to push for the future and could step in. So wide receiver and tackle covers a lot of it. I have a guard, you know, being drafted in the second round with 39th. I'd kind of like to see him take that.
I think, Fred, I think you hit on one that was big for me. I think you're going to see a corner, and I think you're going to see it within the first couple of days, because they need not just that they need one, but there's some really good ones available in this draft, and really good ones available not just day one, but in day two as well. And it would shock me to not see Andrew Berry. He's been good. That's an area he's been good at, is drafting corners. It would shock me with Emerson going. And like you said, to see the way they kind of struggled, if Denzel or Campbell went out, I think one of these corners is going to go. I think a couple areas, you brought up a guard, but I think I'll just emphasize that again. I think interior offensive line. You know, we've spent a lot of time talking about these top end, these tackles, these top end wide receivers. But when you dive into the draft, there's some really good interior offensive linemen available in this draft. You know, obviously you got first round guys like Ioane, but then you start getting into the dunkers of the world, who's kind of projected to go at a guard spot. The Chase Besantises, the Caleb Tiernans, you start to go over into centers, and there's some really good ones there. Slaughter and a couple other guys, Connor Liu. I think the Browns are probably going to, you know, when you talk about what they've done this offseason, I know it wasn't popular with everybody, but also a lot of what they've done this offseason, they're not big long-term contract deals. There's some guys here for a couple of years maybe, but that's what the deal looks like. So I think you may want to build up what kind of that next level of the interior offensive line. And it would surprise me if they didn't do that. And then the last position, I think you borderline have to find a tight end somewhere in the middle rounds of the draft. And I made a video on this when we did This Side Up. But go look at the percentages of players that wind up being at least four-year starters for their teams by position, by round. And it makes you feel pretty good about where the Browns' needs are, at least. Because you got a really good chance on hitting wide receivers in the first round, and still pretty good in the second round, and okay in the third round, and then it goes into a cliff. You got a great chance. It's like an 80% chance on hitting a starter, a tackle, for 4 years in the first round. And then you still got a good chance in the second round. That kind of goes off a cliff. And you see those positions disappear. And then you start to see the third, fourth, fifth rounds. You start to see the guards. You start to see corners, defensive backs. You find some success there in the middle rounds. And then you start to see tight ends. And I think guys like Max Clair from Ohio State, the kid from Vanderbilt, obviously the big one is Sadiq the Freak out of Oregon. I think he'll be gone in the first round. I know the Browns had a visit with him. But I think some the kid out of Notre Dame, I forget his name, Raridan. I think at some point the Browns probably bring in a tight end. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a guy like Max Clair would make a lot of sense. Oscar Delp, some guys, you know, that not top tier needing, but definitely the depth. I think you got Harold Fannin. Besides him, you got a bunch of kind of guys, you know, blocking guys. And so I think it's a much, much more affordable way to go using a fourth, fifth, sixth round pick, you know, on somebody that was productive in college.
So Fred, that all leads to this, the last question I'm going to ask you about the draft. And you indicated, like you hinted at this at the very beginning of the show, but I want to hear your thoughts on this. All this being said, we've talked about all these areas that the Browns, we would love to see them address in the draft. All that being said, Fred, what would you give the odds? What percentage would you give the odds of the sixth pick not being one of these positions, not being a wide receiver, not being a tackle, being maybe a defensive player, being a player that's not everybody's talking about right now? What are the odds you think Andrew Berry might do that?
I think it's probably 50%, because I'll tell you this, they've really never done what the logical thing, or what you're saying, this is for sure what they're going to do. I mean, I can't hardly ever think, you know, of everybody was expecting, you know, even last year when you had the number two pick, the only times I can say everybody knew was when they had the first pick. Oh, it's Myles Garrett. Oh, what a shock. It's Myles Garrett, you know?
Right.
And even the quarterback, you know, they took one, Baker Mayfield, but even with the number two pick last year, I mean, I felt pretty strong. I had a story written on Travis Hunter, you know, because you're like, okay, why would he, you know, go on and on and on and then pass the unit, you know, what he called the best player, you know, possibility, because, and so I really think that there's a good chance somebody will come up and say, hey, we'd like to trade. You know, I think he's more than amenable to move down. I mean, I think he's, you know, he made the quote when we met with him that last year, everybody didn't think we were going to trade down. We did. This year, everybody's talking about trading down, you know, and so they probably won't. But I still think if they get the chance, it's just a matter. We just don't know the variables, and we don't know what sounds like a good deal to us might not be a good deal to them. You know, that's, but I would like to see him change a little bit and draft a wide receiver high, maybe not with the first pick, but I just feel like there's a stubbornness that we're just not going to draft him at the top of the draft. We can figure that out later. And I could have seen if they would have traded for one or signed one free agency, but you're seeing middle of the road free agent wide receivers getting paid $25 million
no,
a year.
No, thank you.
Why not get a first round wide receiver and you got them under contract for minimum comparative wage for 5 years? And so that leads me to believe that even if he doesn't want to do one at six, that he would at least entertain it at 24. So.
Yeah. Okay, last question I have for you, non-draft related, but again, we had the mini camp It's the first action we're seeing with Todd Monken. Again, much was made about the people that weren't there, and it's not. It's the same thing that happens every year, and we got to talk about it and act like it's a story. And it's not, as Todd Monken basically said. But with that being said, just tell us a little bit, Fred, before we get out of here with Inside the Browns Beat. I think a lot of people want to know just the noticeable, if there were noticeable differences between the last several years, obviously, with Kevin Stefanski running things, and what kind of things you noticed were different, what kind of things you saw were different. I know we saw a lot of reports that they ran a lot of full team drills. I think Todd Monken's quote, he got asked about it, and I think he said, yeah, because we can, which I thought was great. Yep. But just tell us about what things were noticeably different under Todd Monken than we've seen with Kevin Stefanski.
Well, yeah, it was thrown together because it was they had been totally inside, so it was just cold turkey out on the field. They had a walkthrough. That was the first thing in the morning. And most noticeable to me was over 2 hours. Kevin Stefanski, and the reason, one of the reasons the coaches or the players liked him, I felt like he didn't push him too hard. I mean, I always kind of joked with the other media. I said, I think I could make it through, you know, a Browns practice as long as I didn't get hit. If I could get an orange jersey on, because they don't really hit and they don't go that long. Well, we got a thing that we were supposed to practice was at 12:45. So we got there, they took us out about 12:20 and they started early. And we were supposed to interview Monken and Sanders and Gabriel after practice at 2:20. And that's when they said interviews would be 2:20. So we thought, okay, well, they certainly aren't going to practice that long. So there must be a cooling off. Well, they went till 2:25. So I had them over 2 hours. And I know it's the first day and they're putting a lot in, but I think Monken is a little old school. And he's coming from John Harbaugh, who, I think it was Zay Flowers recently criticized Harbaugh for the number of injuries because they practice so hard physically. I think that Monken, if I was to read it right here, he's going to have harder, tougher practices, more physical, where they might even tackle to the ground. Yep. And I think that they will play in the preseason some, where Stefanski never played anybody. He didn't want anybody to get hurt. But then the Browns all got hurt, and they have a lot on injury reserve. So I don't know if that's the answer or not. But with that being said, we know Tomlin is very physical in his days. The AFC North as a whole, I think, is very tough physical football. I think Monken's going to be a little more physical in practices, and I think he's going to be a little longer in practices.
Yeah. All right, cool. All right, Fred, Inside the Browns Beat pre-draft coverage ends here. Again, we want to make sure you are ready to go for the OBR Draft Cave. So starting tomorrow, get all your work done early. Make sure you got your snacks. Make sure you got your beverages of choice. And then jump in with us on YouTube, on Twitch, wherever you want to hang out with us. But the OBR Draft Cave will be live tomorrow night, starting at 7:30. We're going to take you all the way through the first round, including what might be two Browns picks. That's what it looks like for right now, as well as all the rest of the picks of the first round. And then we'll be right back with you Friday night, starting at 6:45, and on Saturday, starting at 11:45. And we're going to take you all the way through until at least whether the Browns are done picking or whether we just can't do it anymore on Saturday, because there's a chance. But again, it's all hands on deck for the OBR crew. Fred's going to be bringing us stuff from Berea. Park is going to be bringing us stuff from Pittsburgh. He's down there, our buddy Park Fissler from this side up. Pete, Joe, and I will be on. Jax from across the pond will be joining us. The whole crew, Sam will be joining us. The whole crew will be here. So don't let me forget Barry. Don't let me forget the boss, Barry. He'll be joining us.
I've got some special guests too from Channel 19 that are going to be popping in Friday and Saturday. They have a show live Thursday, but Friday and Saturday. So stay tuned for all of them. We're gonna cover it from every angle, people I can grab out in Berea.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time. So make sure you're tuned in. It's going to be one of the best draft caves in OBR history, and it all starts tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. Next up here, we're going to take a break until 9 o'clock, and then I'll be back with Chad, Joe, our special guest, Justin Rowan from the Chase Down podcast, where we're going to talk a little bit about the Cavs to get things kicked off and their 2-0 lead in the playoffs over the Toronto Raptors. But then we're going to dive in to our draft talk on Garage Beers, where we're going to have a little bit of fun with it, have a couple beers, and talk all things NFL draft. So you go hang out, go to the bathroom, do whatever you got to do, kiss the kids goodnight, whatever you got to do, and then come back and join us at 9 o'clock for Garage Beers. We will be right here on the OBR streaming network. That's going to do it for this episode. Again, special thank you goes out to all of you that joined us. The live comments were great, and it was busy in the comments. So shout out to you guys for being awesome over there. It was hard to keep up with, to be honest. So that was great. If you can't catch us, remember, you can always catch us either on demand on YouTube or Twitch or on the podcast version. So keep that in mind. Big shout out to the OBR for hosting us. We appreciate them. And again, that's going to do it for us. He is Fred Greetham. I am Michael Keefe. Draft Cave starts tomorrow, so make sure you're locked in. But until then, as always, go Browns.
Thank you. We'll see you.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search the Great Bear Rescue to learn more.